You have found Authentic Business Adventures, a business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Past episodes of the Authentic Business Adventures program can be found in the podcast link at drawincustomers.com. We are coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Radio Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. Today, we're welcoming slash preparing to learn from Dr. Chris Vitale, owner of Sun Prairie Pet Clinic. Dr. Chris Vitale, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm doing well. Yourself?
I am doing super awesome because we got you in the studio. And I've been trying to do this for so long
because I guess I was busy.
I don't know if that's good or bad.
It's a good problem to have, I guess.
There are a lot of dogs, but we don't want them to be sick. So yeah, you take care of my dog Kirby, yep. And she's doing great.
She's doing so well. Yeah,
I have you to thank for the majority of that.
Is she healing up good after that work?
She is. Yeah, I took her to get inspected today, and she's all good.
Excellent. I like that.
Yeah, so healing up.
No, this is a story.
I would say 3 weeks of the cone of shame will just about fix any dog, I
suppose. Yeah, and if you know, the hardest part for the dog is the cone of shame. It has nothing to do with the incision, more to do with why am I wearing a lampshade?
Yeah, I think, so she's a smart dog, right?
Quite.
She is smart enough to know that if she bangs that thing around,
she'll get your attention
real
fast. It'll
annoy us enough that we have to figure out a solution, right? She learned to use the seam on the thing to dig at her little boo-boo.
Oh, man.
And, yeah, I'm like, ah.
Yeah, some dogs just give you trouble. Some dogs just make you think.
Yeah. Most of the time I love it that she's a smart dog because it's fun to go running with her and she's just kind of hanging out while other dogs are pulling their owners.
Yeah, but sometimes it's a
sometimes
pain in the
tuchus. Like, you know, why don't you just do our taxes instead of dinking around with this lampshade on your head? But at any rate, we digress,
we
right?
Do. Yeah.
So you got a business, Sun Prairie Pet Clinic in Sun Prairie here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you, how long have you had this?
Opened up under my control April of 2008.
Oh, wow. Okay, so it's been a while.
It has.
11 years. Wow, 11 plus years.
Yeah, we did. We did 11 this year, 11 and a half right now, and
okay.
Kind of maturing nicely at
sure.
this point.
That's nice. So you bought it, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Prior to that, owned by a gentleman who had been in practice for 50 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and the building has been in place now since the late 80s. So the building's been there as a practice for some time. It was well established when I got here.
All right.
You can imagine the gentleman that had it before me was ready for retirement. So I kind of came on the scene at the right time.
Sure.
He was ready to bequeath the place, and I was ready to move into one.
So tell me, did he get a broker? Or is that how you found it? Or
no.
You knew him and...
This is really old school. You know, again, you're talking about a gentleman that had been doing this for 50 years. So,
yeah,
I mean, he did everything with people that he knew.
Yeah.
It was quite a bit out of his comfort zone. Of course, you may have to sell a practice once, maybe twice in your career.
Sure.
More if you're a broker, but a lot less if you're lucky and you don't have to move on.
Right.
Yeah, so in his situation, he had... placed a blind ad in the Wisconsin Veterinary Medical Association newsletter.
Okay.
I was living in Illinois at the time.
Yeah.
And through a variety of constructs, which we can go through in the next hour, I was getting in a point where I was ready to start a practice or get into a practice, get into an ownership position.
Sure.
He was looking to get out. I was looking to get in. It was a blind box.
Yeah.
The funny story behind that is he put that out in March. February, March, and I got it, and I responded back to it, and I just sent it off. I was like, oh, it's a blind box. I don't really know how much I can do, you know.
So you didn't know location or
anything? No, it said somewhere on the southern half of the state, southeastern state.
That limits it to about 500 places.
Right? Yeah, and at that point, you're like, oh, well, you know, what can it hurt, right? If it turns out that he was wrong and it's, you know, halfway to Montello. I mean,
sure.
And I lived in Chicago at the time, so... personal decision to move up north, and so this is kind of dovetailed. Well, I responded to that in March. I didn't hear nothing till May.
Really?
I didn't hear nothing.
2 months.
I'm going into a dinner party with my wife, and we're in Chicago, and a phone goes off, tells you how long ago this goes. It's a flip phone, right? So I flip the phone open. And I don't recognize the number, but I'm like, well, I'll take it. So, sure. I answered the phone.
Robocalls weren't as much of a thing back then.
Well, not right? From the 608 error code, I'll tell you that right now. And gentleman gets on the phone. He says, hey, this is Dr. Sartori from the pet clinic. And I said, I'm not familiar with you. He said, oh, you responded to a blind ad back in March. I said, oh, yeah. He said, are you still interested? And I'm sitting there outside this friend's bungalow. I was like, well, yes.
Sure.
I am. I haven't moved on.
Right.
My second thought was, man, in March, April, May, that's 3 months.
Right.
But I was like, yeah, I'm interested. He said, great. Why don't we meet sometime this weekend? And I was like, that was like 2-3 days later. I was like, okay, here we go. So, and I had no clue what it was going to get into. It started a long dance.
Sure.
He really needed to sell to the right guy.
Mm-hmm.
I had no clue if I was the right guy. It turns out I was.
Right.
But I came up to visit from Chicago, got to be a half dozen times.
Wow.
Sat down after he closed the office at noon on Saturday. I would come in at
9:30. Sure.
And we just sit down and talk. We weren't talking about medicine. We weren't even talking about how you'd run the business.
Okay.
He was like, tell me about your family. Tell me about how you got here. Where do you like eating Italian food? Stuff like that.
All right.
Because he didn't really have a strong thought about whether or not I was going to be able to do the medicine.
Sure.
He was more worried that I was the right guy to run his practice.
Real, just from a character point
right.
of view.
It's all
interesting. Okay.
And it's interesting because at that point, it's totally contrary to what we're taught nowadays.
Right.
I mean, current thinking is when I'm fixing to sell my practice, when I'm ready to retire, top dollar.
Right.
Who's going to give me the most money?
Sure.
Show me the money.
Sure.
And he was... Show me the character.
All right.
And it's backwards when you think about it, because once he sells it to me, my practice is not his anymore.
Right.
But he was obviously very, emotionally invested in it. So, and it was a process. If I was trying to play by current rules,
mm-hmm.
I would have told him to walk, because I was there half a dozen times. It took me weeks and weeks and weeks to put this all together.
So it sounds like, you come up here, 12:30, you guys are chatting. When you leave that first meeting, second meeting, did you get back in your car thinking, what did I just accomplish there?
Exactly. Yeah, I spent the first few visits. I mean, the wife and I would be driving back down to Chicago, and she would literally say, what just happened?
Sure.
Because there was no transaction.
Right.
There was no plan for transaction.
Okay.
There was no bill sale. There were no data points. There was
no letter of
meeting.
Intent
no,
or
nothing like that.
Okay.
And I said, I think we just met with him and his wife. And she said, what did we do? What did we
that
accomplish?
Mundane.
I said, I think we had a can of Coke and we talked to this guy.
Sure.
This went on for quite some time. Months and months and months.
Months?
Yeah, months and months. Over. I mean,
how
I didn't
did you
go,
not pull the shoot?
At the time I was, I was working down in Chicago. I was having a, I was still in the process trying to gather up making enough money to do this sort of thing.
Sure.
So I wasn't sure how ready I was.
So were you a vet in Chicago?
Yeah. At that time I'd been on a vet school for quite some time. This all went down in 2007. I got out of school in 95.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So I'm a good
experience building up.
Yeah, I'm a good 12, 13 years out of school.
Sure.
And I'd worked for a wide number of veterinarians prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I was job hopping, but I was doing relief work down in Chicago.
Oh.
So I'm kind of a vet for hire.
Okay.
Sort of a hired gun that would come in. So I'd work 5 different clinics in 5 different days.
Wow. Okay.
And it's a ton of fun. You learn 5 different ways of doing things.
Sure.
Most of them good. Some of them not so.
Sure.
And when you get that level of experience, seeing how things work behind the scenes,
mm-hmm.
that's when you start getting this crazy idea, I might be able to do this.
Right. Because you have enough experience to say what works and
on
what
the medicine
not.
Side. Yeah.
Sure.
Didn't work on the business. I'll talk to you on the business side.
Sure.
After we talk about that. But we had this kind of intricate little courtship dance between me and the previous owner, and ultimately he said, yeah, this sounds like something that'd be good. And that's when I had my wife, who's the CPA lawyer, and she had to step in and kind of drop the papers. But if you mention the word lawyer or something like that to him prior to that, or letters of intent, or
sure,
he'd swoop.
Oh.
He'd walk away, not
all
interested.
Right. Sure.
It took me the first 2 visits to convince him that it's okay to talk to my wife even though she's a lawyer.
All right.
Because she's one of the good guys.
Sure.
She's on our side. It's okay.
Right.
We're not trying to hose you,
Right.
Because that was a different generation.
Sure. So did he have a number in mind?
For the sale?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did, and we threw it about back and forth.
Okay.
His practice was not big at the time. It's the whole reason I could talk to him.
Okay.
And you can imagine that after 50 years, he was practicing 50-year-old medicine.
Sure.
You know, I was the young gun coming in, you know, so I had... And I had multiple ways of doing things in the Chicago area, so it's a little bit more cosmopolitan. So I had a little bit more of a technical heavy side of things, which appeals to some people,
right?
But not so much to others.
Okay.
So he had an idea as to what he wanted to sell it for. We had to knock it back and forth a couple of times before we ultimately landed on a number. And and I won't lie to you, it was more than my wife wanted to pay, but it's less than he wanted.
Okay, well, as long as it wasn't more than he wanted.
That's kind of how it came out.
Was he also vetting other people or that you know of?
In retrospect, I found out the answer is no.
Okay.
At the time, I didn't know that.
Okay.
So I met him six times over the course of several months thinking he was doing this every weekend.
Right. Who would have the time to do that?
Well, he's been out.
Maybe.
Yeah, at the time, his practice was paid for.
All right.
His house was paid for. His car was paid
for. Probably a couple times over after 50 years.
Yeah, he was doing it for lunch money.
Sure.
So, and for point of pride.
Right.
He liked his job.
Sure.
It's the thing with veterinarians. We're weird.
Mm-hmm.
We like our work.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, so I'm told.
Right.
And so he was just working to work. And he'd make lunch money, gas money, that sort of thing.
Sure.
So he wasn't in any rush at all.
All right.
So if you come in there and say, I want to do this right now, his answer would be, you might need to find another clinic.
Sure. All right.
So we took our time with it, and it was a painful process just from the fact that I don't know where my job, my life is going with this. Luckily, I'm working down in Chicago, so I've got income coming in. But it was probably the only way that I could have done this.
Okay.
Only way that I could have done this, because then it was more of a soft entry.
Sure.
Into things, and the practice that I bought was quiet.
Okay.
It was one doctor practice.
Sure.
Being run by someone who might show up late, leave early.
All right.
If he didn't have appointments scheduled in the back half of the afternoon, he sent the staff home. Locked the door, turned off the phones, we're done today.
All right. We made our nut.
A little bit different nowadays.
Sure. You know? Right.
But that's the only way I could have stepped into something.
Okay. So why did you do that versus just starting from scratch?
You know, the practice at the time that I bought it was as close to a startup as you could call it without actually being one.
Fair. 50 years is not a startup.
Right. Well, but the mechanics behind it and the dollars behind it were such that the client base wasn't built.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
It had been through... He had been a veterinarian for 50 years.
Yeah.
He did mixed animal work, so he was doing small animal and large animal.
Okay.
Not uncommon. Injury stopped him from doing large animal stuff, so he had to switch over to small animal full-time. But while he was injured, he actually had someone else running the business for 10 years.
10 years?
At the end of the 10 years, he couldn't come to terms, sale to practice, so he...
To that person.
Correct.
After a decade.
So the other person took his client roster, moved a mile and a half away, opened up his own business, and left the old man with a building.
Yeah.
And nothing else.
So, I can't say that I wouldn't have done the same thing after a decade.
Right. Well, I get it. The guy could be prickly. I mean, there are still clients that say, how did you ever get to terms with him? And my answer is, the timing just sort of fell right.
You're the one that made those trips.
I guess maybe I was the one who persisted when other people would have thrown in the towel.
Sure.
But the... So when I come in, he had been in business on his own for only 3 years, starting from essentially zero clients. Now, enough people knew his name or they didn't come back in. But so I bought a practice that was essentially 3 years old. I was just kind of a startup with a push start.
Sure, that's fair.
I mean, I had a client. And to his credit, I mean, the gentleman that I bought it from turned out to be our best cheerleader.
Oh, really?
He'd go to the grocery store, see people he knows in produce section. Hey, how you doing? How's your dog? Hey, you see the new kid yet? You go check him out. He's pretty good. He'd go to Cornfest. Hi, how you doing? Boy, I haven't seen you in a long time. You seen the new kid? You should go check him out. He's pretty good.
I think it's awesome he calls you the new kid.
Yeah. 13 years in practice, I'm the new kid. But that's okay because he's 50.
Yeah, whatever.
You know, give him points.
Right.
So that's, you know, kind of the... So I... When the question comes up, why didn't you start from scratch? Well, I darn near did.
Sure.
Plus, a true startup from scratch requires, as you can imagine.
Oh yeah.
Capital investment. My profession is relatively capital and labor intensive.
Sure, you need a building. I need a building.
Yeah. I need the labor. But they got to be good. It can't just be kids that are flipping burgers.
Right.
And equipment. I mean, anesthetic equipment, monitoring equipment, lab work.
Mm-hmm.
All these things are highly sensitive pieces of, of equipment. They're not cheap.
Right.
So startup costs are pretty insane. So
that's fair. That's totally fair.
So a chance to jump in, three-year-old practice, got at least something moving through the front door. I don't have to start with no clientele. It really represented the only opportunity that I would have had.
Sure. That's fair. Was this the only place that you were looking at purchasing? Or were you kicking around other places around Southern
Wisconsin?
I had
been to visit other clinics. I had worked at a place down in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yep.
Wow. That's opposite end of the map.
Opposite end of the map. My wife's got family down that way. We were down there for about a year, year and a half. And when I moved down there, the gentleman was under the impression, he was, going to sell the practice at some point.
Sure.
Kind of kicking around 5 years, plan that sort of thing. So I went down there and, 1 year into my tenure there, I said, hey, how's that plan coming? He said, 5 years might be 10.
Oh.
I'm not going to sell a practice. I might lease it. I might sell shares, so I was like, final answer. And he said, final answer. I said, all right, I'm out of here.
That's a lot of gray area.
Yeah. And, one of the lessons that I had learned, which was handshakes are great. And the guy never really violated his handshake.
Sure.
But we never really had a plan. Never really had anything put down. And so I walked away from that. And I knew that I had to bail out. I knew I had to say, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I couldn't get angry at the guy. He got a year's worth of work out of me.
Right.
I got something out of him, not just a paycheck. I learned, you've got to plan that out ahead.
Right.
And that's probably the reason why I came up here a half dozen times, visited with the guy I bought from.
Yeah.
I mean, he was vetting me while I was vetting him.
Sure.
I wanted to make sure that he wasn't running this place into the ground and there was some sort of a reputation I was taking over.
Right.
And what was that reputation? And because...
It's fair.
Well...
You don't know because you're not from the town.
And not from here. And you get the good and the bad when you buy someone else's practice.
Sure.
And there was a whole lot of good that I got. There were some people that didn't like the prior owner. They had a patient that didn't, respond to medication the way they wanted. And so that naturally blows back on the vet. So so you take some of those too. And truth is that overwhelming was positive. And that owes to the success that we had from the start.
Gotcha. That's cool. So do you mind if I ask from a, you don't have to talk numbers or anything in regards to the purchase. Was it a lump sum or was it based on?
We lumped it. We didn't do owner financing or anything like that.
Okay.
We did a lump sum. I had been working for about a year and a half in the Chicago area doing relief work so I can set my own hours. So I was working, and I won't lie to you, I was working at least 6, if not 7 days a week.
Wow.
Frequently, I would work during the day at one clinic, pack it up, get in the car, drive to one of the other 24-hour clinics in the area, work somewhere at 6 and 7 o'clock till about 1 in the morning because I did emergency work for the first half of my career.
Okay.
And those guys are in demand, so they pay top dollar.
Sure.
And then I would work until about 1 o'clock in the morning, get home, eat something, go to sleep, craft for about 4 or 5 hours, do it all over again.
Wow.
And you got real tired, but at the time, but it was lucrative.
Sure.
I mean, I had no insurance. Luckily, I was covered under the wife's insurance.
Sure.
And no kids.
Okay.
At the time. So
I was just going to ask you.
No
kids. You were
at the
married,
time.
But
no.
Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, and I was lucky because I can carry my dogs with me. I had two dogs at the time. I would have never seen them. But
oh,
I told everyone I was working for, I was like, if I'm working for you, I'm bringing my dogs to work. And they're like, sure, put them in the back.
Funny.
So I'd be driving around town with my Mazda 3, my dogs in the back.
Right.
That's what I did. I did it 6-7 days a week, sometimes one or two shifts a day.
Holy cow.
And so we were able to purchase a practice.
Sure.
Lump sum.
Okay.
The practice certainly wasn't worth a ton of money. We didn't pay a ton of money.
Right.
What that means is that I went from working 6-7 days a week, and I purchased a practice where we might have seen a day's worth of work every 4 days.
Oh, okay.
It
was almost a startup. Okay.
It was a significant deceleration.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. I'd see one or two patients in the morning where I had 8 slots.
Sure.
And then in the afternoon, I'd see one or two patients where I had 8 more slots.
All right.
And, I was definitely living off the wife's salary for the first 3 years.
Okay. That's the way it goes.
Yep. That's startup.
That's fair. Totally fair.
I mean, it's essentially startup. I mean, we did not make money. We didn't pay our own bills for 3 years.
Okay. Well, that's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. It's just a thing. totally understand. You first start your business. You're not making money on day one.
No,
we didn't. It was rare anyways.
No, and then in the second 3 years, we started paying our own bills.
Okay.
And that means I was paying the staff. It wasn't necessarily paying me.
Sure.
I took home a couple of bucks, but really still living off the wife. It was the third 3 years that we started to see the growth curve kind of hit that parabolic point.
Sure.
It was kind of really low at the point, but then all of a sudden it starts to take off. And that's because we don't advertise. You don't see a lot of advertisements for veterinarians.
That is true.
Think about it. When's the last time you heard a radio spot? When's the last time you saw a billboard? When's the last time you saw anything for a veterinarian? We don't advertise.
Yeah.
But what's the best advertising? Word of mouth.
Word of mouth, yeah.
How long does it take? It takes a long time. You only see 4 patients a day.
Sure. Right.
But, you know.
Talk a lot, guys.
Yeah. And at the time, you know, 2008, you know, where was Facebook?
I
didn't kick in really till 2010.
Yeah.
You know, so you just tell those 4 people, hey, you know, if you liked what you saw, yeah, tell your family, have them come on in.
Sure.
And then you sit back and wait.
Right.
How often do I see my patients? If I'm doing my job and they're healthy,
once a year. Yeah.
Once a year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, how long does it take to build up a clientele? It takes at least a couple of cycles. So for the first 3 years, we grew, but we weren't killing it.
Okay.
The second 3 years, we grew. We still weren't killing it, but at least I could say, hey, look, we paid our own bills.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a plus.
Look at this black in the bank.
Oh, my Lord. And then the second 3 years is when, you know, the growth curve started kicking. We've been there 11 years now.
Sure.
And again, it is parabolic because up until 2016, through 2016, I was a one-doctor practice. So I was there 2008 all the way to 2016 by myself.
Yeah.
2017, I brought on a part-timer.
Very cool.
So I was busy enough to have part-time work.
Sure.
She went to 3/4 time.
Okay.
End of 2017, purchased another practice.
You purchased another practice?
Yep, another one in town.
Okay.
Her, their doctor came on. She came on as a part-timer. So I made my part-timer full-time. So now I got 2 full-timers, and my part-timer. Took on the previous owner of the other hospital part-time.
Yeah.
She was there for a good chunk of time. She was ready for some time off of work, so she took time off of work in the summer of 18.
Okay.
So that means I had 3 doctors worth of work.
2 doctors.
And 2 doctors doing it.
All right. So back to the grind.
Back to the grind. And by that, and so that means I went from 2016, one doctor practice, all the way up to running Mach 5 with my hair on fire.
Sure.
By the mid to late 18.
Gotcha.
And then the beginning of this year, we were looking for other help, and we took on a 3rd full-timer in February this year.
Okay.
And so we were starting to feel a little bit better about it, and then just last week started another part-timer.
Wow.
So 2016, one doctor practice.
Sure.
Midway through 2019, 3.5.
Wow. That's crazy.
That's the parabolic. I mean, it starts out slow, and you're building a relationship, and you kind of get it going, but then once it kicks off... Hang on, buddy, because the Bronco just got out of the chute, and it's going to try to kick you.
So tell me about the second practice that you bought. Were you looking?
No, that was an interesting situation. There's another practice in town, great practice.
Yeah.
Strong relationships with their clients.
Mm-hmm.
But she was ready to sell the practice. She's about my age.
Okay.
And she was ready to sell.
Just because the business side was getting too overwhelming or it wasn't fun?
Yeah, there's a lot of aspects with running a practice. And a lot of people think if you're a good doctor, everything is hunky-dory. And, boy, you better be a good doctor.
Sure.
But the other aspects of it really wear on you.
Mm-hmm. The employees.
And you don't go to school for it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's... So I'm lucky I've got a support group because my wife, you know, is the CPA lawyer. So she can handle a lot of the back-end stuff. I'm doing a lot of the medicine stuff. The medicine stuff.
Yeah.
But the other practice, I mean, they were, you know... They were ready to. She was ready to sell, and I was at a point where I had the luxury to contemplate it.
All right.
And
did she present it to you, or did you just notice it? How did you find out?
I threw it out as a phone call.
Okay.
I mean, I had heard through the grapevine she was trying to sell, but not to me, somebody else. And I had a ton of respect for her and the work that she does, and she had seen some of my patients over the years, just knowing that. Hey, there's another guy across town who seems to be a good doctor, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we had good favorable feelings of what each the other was doing.
Yeah.
And I talked to her and I said, hey, how's the sale going? She said, not as good as we wanted it to. And I said, well, you know, if things don't work out, give me a call.
Right.
She called me back about 30 minutes. And and it was she was ready to sell, and
sure,
and it worked out well. I had an opportunity to contemplate purchase or merger, and right. she was ready to do it. And it gave me, and this goes back to a business decision, right?
Right.
Do I say no to that opportunity?
Right.
Have someone else buy it?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I say, nope, strategically it'd be a wise choice to get these practices together?
Right.
One, because it builds my practice overnight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Number two, it keeps someone else from becoming my competitor.
Sure. That's fair.
Yeah. And I never saw their practice as competition.
Right.
That really wasn't the case. It was more mm-hmm. a matter of someone else might come in who might have the same kind of initiative and drive that I do.
Sure.
And that would pose not an existential threat to my practice, but certainly right. would slow down growth.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. That's fair. Interesting. So what have been some of the biggest challenges as you grow exponentially, essentially?
I mean, by and large, I mean, you start getting that kind of growth rate. And I was, you know, you read about it and people tell you, hey, be prepared if things start growing, because, you know, you're going to have some groundwork laid mm-hmm. for, policies, procedures, stuff like
right,
that.
Right, the system's in place, yeah.
Yeah, you got to have systems in place. And a lot of the systems that I had in place were effective, but they were never codified.
Okay.
And so, by and large, the biggest problem that I have is not the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to get me busy? Well, I don't care. You just work in the emergency room. Right. I'm fine with being busy as a doctor.
Sure.
Personnel.
Right.
When I'm not busy, it's one doctor, two technicians.
Sure.
Staff meetings was, you know, I'd come out of an exam room and say, all right, that worked pretty well. Let's do that again.
Sure.
Staff meeting done. You know, and then you get up to two, three, now four doctors.
Mm-hmm.
Technicians, that six, seven technicians.
Sure.
Throw on two, three receptionists.
Right.
We're big enough now, we have a youth apprentice.
All right.
From the high school in. And she doesn't have a lot of say in policy, but
sure.
You start getting more people into the mix, and
yeah.
you have to find a way to balance all the flavors so that you're
right.
still moving in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest challenge, because there's no training in
right.
veterinary school about how to manage people.
Okay, that's fair.
How do you manage cases? How do you manage medicine, surgical stuff?
Sure.
And people think that's tough. And it is. Don't get me wrong. Obviously, after doing it for a while, you get pretty comfortable with it. But
right.
You know, then someone comes to you and says, oh, you know, one of your technicians has kind of a beef with the other one. They're waiting in your office. Why don't you go hash it out? It's like, oh, I don't really know how to do that.
Are we all over five?
Right. But you know, talk to anybody who's got a business, talk to any place that experiences growth, and you're going to wind up with some of these issues that have to be addressed. And
yeah.
And you know, a couple starts and stops over the course of time.
Sure.
You know, you learn what worked. And so I found that, you know, I've got my systems, most of them written down, but then they also evolve.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're working hard on getting your systems in place, broken down.
Sure.
Between, you know, what do we do, you know, the client aspect of it, the patient aspect of it, interactions with ourselves.
Right.
You try to codify these things, but of course, it can't be black and white. Got to have shades of gray.
There's
some things that are very clear.
Right.
You know, there are some things that you do and don't do when you're at work, but then there's other things that are just kind of, hey, what if and what if. And
right. That can be an endless
rabbit
hole.
It can be endless,
right?
Yeah. And so the problem, you, at least from that aspect of it, you can really get yourself lost in the minutiae.
Sure.
And there's no amount of delegating is going to help you.
Mm-hmm.
There comes a point where you do have to say, you know, I've written down what I need to write.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the rest of this is going to, it's probably like Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And framers had it right in 1700s.
Right.
Here's the rules.
Yes.
But then you do have to have systems in place that allow you to change it as you go.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily I can change my policies faster than United States of America. But
sure.
at the same time, it's just as dramatic.
Sure. That's fair. That's totally fair. Yeah, I'm reading that book. I guess we were talking about this, about John Adams, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence, and then all the delegates, I guess,
yep.
I don't know what you call them, arguing to figure out what they're going to put back on there.
Should we do that, right?
Yeah. Slavery being a big thing that was, some people wanted it taken off there, and some people wanted it fixed and all this jazz.
And, you know, it's easy to look back and say that, you know, things, you know, well, obviously you should do it this way because
right.
we've got 200 years looking back. And
right.
in my situation, you know, I got the advantages. It's a small animal. It's a small business.
Sure.
Right? So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, when it comes right down to it, I own it.
Right.
So when it comes right down to it, I can drop the hammer down.
Right.
But if you want to, you know, blend what you're doing with the people that are there, you've got to be able to get the best out of people,
mm-hmm.
and make it into a coherent message and
sure.
a coherent plan.
Yeah.
That allows you to excel at what you're trying to accomplish.
That's fair. That's totally fair.
And so to answer your question, that's easily the biggest challenge. The biggest challenge I have is not medicine.
Right.
I mean, I get that. And you have right. to, and you go to classes
part.
For it, you go to classes for it, you were trained for it in school.
Sure.
But then ultimately, you know, you're good.
Right.
But I was, you know, never trained on personnel matters and financial matters. My wife's the CPA.
Sure.
You know, and that's my secret weapon. Everyone says, well, why'd you buy a practice? And the answer is, well, because I didn't have to worry about the back half of the hospital.
Sure, that's fair.
So to worry about
that's
the front
half.
That's
a huge
thing. It's huge. And it's good and bad.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you never want to work all day at a place and then go home and talk over dinner about
right.
work again.
Tell us about these metrics and blah, blah, blah.
Lord. So I still, to this day, I still rely on her a ton.
Sure.
To really guide the back half of the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
She's successful in her own right. She's mm-hmm. got her own career.
Okay.
And so over time, I've had to take on some more of those responsibilities. Not so much the financial legal stuff. That's her thing. But, you know, the day-to-day operations, you know, mm-hmm. the HR aspect of it, mm-hmm. personnel management, you know, more of that's going to fall to me over time.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as her career pulls her out of the clinic, then yeah, it's going to be more me. And that's
sure.
It's a concern. It's scary.
Right.
It's a skill I haven't learned yet.
Right. The whole management aspect.
Right.
It sounds like you were just thrown into it pretty quick, actually.
Well, again, you know, and if I had to do it all over again, you know, those first 3 years, 4 years I'm in practice, you know, I had lots of extra time where if I had a clearer appreciation
sure.
for what it's like to run a multi-doctor practice versus mm-hmm. one-doctor practice, probably would have been feverishly
sure.
writing down
right.
stuff into the wee hours of the morning every day about,
right.
you know, here's how we're going to handle it when we have four doctors
mm-hmm.
and there's conflict and there's collaboration and there's, you know, these things that we need to know about.
Right.
But trying to gameplay that,
yeah.
I mean, it's one thing to read about it.
Right. Very true.
It's another thing to envision it. And
right.
it's another thing to live it. And
sure.
I won't lie to you. 2008, think about this for a second. Bought that practice at the start of the worst
right.
recession in the last 75 years.
Sure.
I won't lie to you. I mean, we spent the first 3 years saying, is this going to work?
Maybe we messed
up. Is this going to work?
Sure.
You know? So I wasn't thinking about writing systems in place for when I was a four-doctor practice.
Right.
I was busy trying to make sure that
sure.
I held line
today?
On. And so, and unfortunately, the skills that get you through a recession
mm-hmm.
are not the skills that allow you to expand
sure.
successfully when you're in a period of boom.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the same things that got me through the recession, which was, you know, keeping staff lean.
Sure.
Right? We didn't, I mean, I did a lot of tech work because I didn't hire a lot of extra techs.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I didn't outsource anything because I had the wife run the business side of it. I was
mm-hmm.
cutting the lawn.
Right.
I mean, I didn't outsource anything.
Right.
Well, those things hold you back during mm-hmm. periods of expansion because now if I'm cutting lawn.
You're not fixing dogs.
I'm not fixing dogs. I'm not
managing
spending time,
people.
Not managing people. I'm
sure.
not writing my systems down. So
yep.
it's, and it's hard when you look back and say, man, I was successful.
Sure.
Because I was able to tighten my belt.
Right.
And then someone says, you'd be more successful if you loosened it up a little bit.
Right.
Well, I don't think I can do that.
Sure.
You know, are you sure?
I've been squeezing this thing for so long.
And you read these books, and they're by people that are very smart. And I'm sure that they've got everything going for them.
Sure.
But when you're living it, and when it's your life's
right.
when it's your life on the line,
mm-hmm.
boy, it's really hard to trust skills that you were never really. I mean, I was taught to be a doctor.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Taught to be anything else. So
mm-hmm.
it's a challenge. And some people move into that really freely. Some people can release that and say, no, this is another skill. I'm just going to learn it.
Sure.
And I'm probably still a little bit more cautious about it just
right.
because it's maybe coming through the recession.
Sure.
But at the same time, it's a different set of skills.
Right. That's fair. That's fair. You know, it's interesting talking to you because we've been, what was it, my dog's 8 and a half.
Your dog's one of the lifers.
Yeah, she's awesome. So we've been coming to you for the past 8 and a half years, and I can remember first coming to you, and I walk into a business, and you just scope things out, right? Mm-hmm. What do we got going on here? What can be improved? And I remember thinking, this guy needs calls on call, right? And then a few years go by, and I'm like, he doesn't need calls on call anymore. He's got a good thing going on here. And then, you know, you come again, and they're like, there are 5 people working here, all busy.
And I've never seen them before in
doing
my life.
Stuff. Yeah. So it's interesting when you tell me just a backstory about the girls. They're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I can remember thinking, like, who are you?
Yeah. When you first started coming in 2010, your dog was just a pup at the time.
Yeah.
And at that time, I mean, I can call it my appointment book from 10 years ago, and I can tell you, I could spend 45 minutes to an hour.
Sure.
With you and really, you know, build the kind of relationship that I like to build with people.
Mm-hmm.
What you've seen over from your side of the exam table is, you know, that growth mm-hmm. still allows me to get into those appointments.
Mm-hmm.
But the supporting cast changes. And so, you know, you trust the supporting cast because I trust the supporting cast.
Right.
And they're good at it.
Right.
The part that's really challenging for me, I would love to still sit down
yeah.
for 45 minutes and sit down on the ground and, you know, rub Kirby's belly for
sure.
half an hour while we talk about stuff in medicine.
She'd love you to.
She's a good one. No doubt about that. But it's a challenge.
Right. You have other stuff going on.
Right. And so, and that's the balance.
Mm-hmm.
That's really where you try to find that middle ground.
Sure.
Of, you know, how far can I keep 1 foot in the old
right.
while still pointing with 1 foot toward the new.
Right. That's fair. That's totally fair.
I mean, I think every business has that. I don't care if you're making widgets. You
know, right.
I don't care if you own a screen printing shop. I don't
right.
care if you own an auto repair shop. I mean, it's all the same. Technology moves forward. You build there's part practice, of part in the business where you're building relationships.
Right.
You're building clientele up.
Mm-hmm.
And then over time, and that transitions into more maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, what happens next?
Right.
You know, do you go to more growth?
Right.
Well, we have.
Sure.
And we've added doctors. And,
right.
And that's great. It allows us more flexibility with what we do, but it adds complexity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if you're not ready for the complexity,
right.
you know, if you have a one bay garage
right.
to fix cars,
mm-hmm.
life's pretty straightforward.
Right.
If you have a four bay,
mm-hmm.
you have to manage all those cars, you have to manage all those mechanics and
the customers,
right?
Yeah,
and so it's good,
yeah,
but it's also challenging.
Sure, and you become more of a manager, or probably have to balance the act between being a vet and being a manager of the business, right?
Correct, and it's, you know, I went to school to be a doctor,
right?
Yeah, I have a ton of fun with patient care, patient interaction. It's
mm-hmm.
really why most of the people in my profession join mm-hmm. the profession.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't. You go through first year vet students, and you don't ask them, hey, why are you going into vet school? And they don't say, because I want to own a business.
Right.
I like animals.
Sure.
And I like helping people.
Right.
And so as you get older,
right.
and you realize, yeah, I've got some people, I got a lot of people that are relying on me now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just me.
Right.
And my job and my life on the line. I've got employees that are relying on us to make the decisions that keep this place moving forward.
Sure.
And you feel a strong sense of responsibility to do that. So that's, you know, I want to keep the business growing, keep it growing. But at the same time, you know, you can't get lost in it. You have
right.
to be able to balance it off. What do you like doing?
Right.
Don't lose yourself.
No.
You know.
No.
And so then, yeah, so there's always a push and pull at this stage of the game. Patient contact, doctor time versus mm-hmm. management time,
mm-hmm.
you know, to keep the systems in place,
sure.
keep the place humming.
Right.
You know, and we haven't even talked about personal time.
No, right. Which, personal time, what's that?
And, you know, there's a lot of good stuff coming out about that, you know.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes millennials get their chops bust a little hard because they've got a pretty clear line in the sand. You know, I'm not working, you know, 60 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have worked 60 hours a week. I did it on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, would I do that on an ongoing basis? Would I do it for someone who felt that you have to work 60 hours a week in order to, quote, pay your dues?
Nah.
I don't know. And the millennials are telling you, no, they're not interested. You
sure.
can take your dues and you can keep them.
Right.
You know, I'll work 35, 40 hours a week. I want my weekends off.
Right.
And
but then they couldn't achieve what you achieved.
Well, that is really the trade-off because right. there's a lot of people in the current generation, a lot of millennials, who mm-hmm. really don't want to own a practice.
That's fair. Totally fair.
Yeah.
I just feel like there is this disconnect where they want to skip about five or six rungs on that ladder to climb wherever they're trying to hit, right?
You know, I work with a number of millennials, but, you know, they're well educated. They get it.
Sure.
They know what's going on around them. And a lot of the ones that I work with, I mean, you get them in the workday, they work hard.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, you know, they want their free time.
Sure. There's nothing wrong with
it. No, I respect it completely. Matter of fact, it's a lesson I'm learning.
Right.
Lesson I'm learning because, you know, after I'm done with patient care, after I'm done with management time, after I'm done, you know, trying to get the place running real good, you know, what's left over for me?
Right.
Because now I do have two kids.
Sure.
I do have a wife I want to see.
Sure.
And carving that out is a challenge. And I would dare say it's been harder for me to carve out personal time than it was ever for the other stuff.
Really? Okay.
Because of the drive. It's like, oh my
sure.
God, I got this place going. I got these people relying on
right.
me. I've got to see more patients. I have to write those SOPs. I got to get all that done.
Right. You know, that's fair. I can appreciate that.
Yeah, and all of a sudden it's 10:30 at night. I'm like, oh, my kids went to bed without me again. Gosh
right.
darn it.
Right.
Well, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going through this world to miss too many Little League games.
Right.
You know, so I'm at a point now where I can say, yeah, I'm going to get some more time for me in there somewhere.
Right. That's the goal, I imagine, right? Otherwise,
right.
what are you doing it all for?
That's exactly it. And I think hopefully every business goes through that phase. This is a good problem to have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you're lucky enough to be busy and you're lucky enough to have that kind of pull,
right.
the business is pulling you because, I mean, it's successful and you mm-hmm. really want to keep it going, to actually sit there and say, boy, I really need to make some time for myself, that's a problem that a lot of people face.
Right.
I think we're getting smarter about recognizing it.
Some people are.
Well,
yeah.
It's a big problem in our profession.
Right.
It's a big problem.
Oh,
in our profession.
I bet.
Recent statistics shown, actually, there was a study that came out just the last couple of weeks. It's a very sobering thought. You know, the suicide rate among veterinarians is 2.5 times.
I've heard that between veterinarians and dentists, I want to say.
Yeah. Well, yeah. 2.5 times over the general population.
That's insane.
It's scary. It's tragic.
Considering you're in a position to help other people or pets, whatever.
And they feel that's part of the dynamic. You know, these people that are drawn to the profession are helpers.
Okay.
They are highly intelligent, you know, mm-hmm. very gifted people. But there's this internalized sense of loss if things don't go perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And not every case goes right.
Sure.
Not every client loves you.
Right.
Not every interaction goes the way you want it to.
Sure.
And so a lot of these type A people that are very caring... we'll turn it inward.
Interesting.
And,
okay.
And it makes for couple that with, you know, the unfortunate ready access to euthanasia medications, drugs, coupled with the culture of euthanasia. That's another thing they get worried about.
Sure.
You know, because that's something that happens every day.
Right.
In our profession, I mean, there are animals that are suffering.
Sure.
And we are called upon to end that suffering. And if a veterinarian,
mm-hmm.
the theory thinking and what the statistics show, if a veterinarian is suffering, it lends them down that path, which is, of
sure.
course, very, very dark.
If X, then Y. So they're just feeling that.
Just very, very dark.
This is the X. Okay.
Yeah. And so it's so there's a big push in the profession to recognize people that are in need like that.
Mm-hmm.
And although I haven't lost any friends to a suicide.
Mm-hmm.
I own a practice now.
Right.
I've got three other doctors to practice. I've mm-hmm. got 12 other people in my profession.
Sure.
And I'm not a big practice. There are places that have hundreds of locations across the country.
Sure.
But if you don't look at that and mm-hmm. treat that as an important part of what you do, you missed a boat. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's an immense amount of responsibility to feel.
Sure.
You want to make sure people enjoy what they're doing. That's
right.
why you're doing it. To
right.
answer your question, that's why you do it. You know, you do it because you like work, and I go to work every day because I love what I do. I'm fortunate. There are
right.
people that go to work every day because they need the paycheck.
Yeah.
The people that go every day at work because they don't want to leave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I go to work because I really do like what I do.
Right.
And I'm lucky that I'm able to make money doing what I do.
Mm-hmm.
But I got other people that are relying on me now.
Sure.
So you feel that responsibility.
Yeah, it's interesting how you moved through essentially purchasing a job and then building it up to now you own this business. That you transitioned, and now you just have a different set of headaches.
Right. And, the first set of headaches were existential.
Sure.
Are we going to pay our bills at the end of the month?
Right.
And then after it became clear that, we are going to be able to pay our bills, mm-hmm. then there's a whole new set of questions. So how are you going to grow?
Right.
And then when you grow, you have a whole new set. Well, how are we going to manage this growth?
Right.
And how are we going to have, and who do I trust to help mm-hmm. me manage it? Because I can't do it by myself anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. so now I've got to manage personalities.
Sure.
Every one of my doctor staff are highly intelligent, very smart. They got a ton of stuff to bring to the table.
Sure.
And I got to blend it all together.
Right.
And make sure that they're happy, make sure right. I'm happy too. It's a good problem to have.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a problem.
That's fair.
It's just good.
That's fair. Just about every problem's got a good side of some kind of, almost every problem.
Yeah, and you got to look at it as progress.
Yeah.
And if you don't, that's when you start feeling, why am I doing this?
Sure.
Someone just turned the treadmill up to 5.
Right.
I used to be cruising at 2.
Right.
And what's the point? Someone's threatening to put it up at 10.
Yeah,
right. So you need help.
Don't touch that dial. Nice. So what have you learned in the past, let's call it 5 years, since this huge, phenomenal growth?
I have a tremendous amount of respect for people that have successful businesses.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the one thing I've learned. It's not a matter of, make a better widget.
Sure.
Right? Fix a car better and you're going to mm-hmm. get better. It's not as simple as that.
Right.
You have to do your core job well.
Mm-hmm.
My core job is medicine.
That's expected.
Yeah. And it's good that people, that you're able to do that.
But mm-hmm.
what I've learned in the last 5 years is that, boy, you'd better be ready to move on to the next level.
Right.
If not, you better be able to find someone who can help you with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got a ton of respect for people that grow their businesses and they're 12,
sure.
20, 30, 40 years in business. Because, I have a new appreciation for just what that means.
Right.
And how much work that takes.
Right.
That's the biggest thing I've learned.
Sure. Do you see being in business 50 years?
Me?
Yeah.
No. I'm too old.
What's the next 5 years? What do you expect, or what are you aiming for?
I'm 50 years old now, so I'll I'm just thinking in round numbers. Work till I can hopefully retire and leave a viable practice to people that are vested in keeping it going.
Sure. Don't meet with them 20 times over with nothing.
No. I'll see how it plays out. I guess if they like having a good glass of wine.
What did we accomplish in this meeting?
I guess, because if they like a good glass of wine, I guess we'll sit around for a while,
This is just passing the torch. It's how it goes.
Yeah, but and I'm not feeling any urge to get out of business right now.
Sure,
I mean, I'm still at a point where I'm running pretty busy and I like it.
Yeah.
But ultimately, my time at the helm is going to come to an end.
Right, eventually, sure.
And my kids are, it's pretty clear my kids aren't going to be veterinarians.
How old are they now?
Oh my gosh, 10 and 9.
10 and, okay.
11 right. and 9, excuse me.
All right.
11 and 9. So it's, I've been dad to these kids long enough to know that, they're not going to be veterinarians.
No, not so much.
That's okay. That's
all right,
okay.
Fair. That's all right. So what advice would you give to someone that was considering starting up a business of any kind, or maybe in a veterinary place?
Some of the things I did right, some of the things I did wrong. Some of the things I did right was it was very clear to me that I needed help.
Okay.
I had done, when I bought this practice, I've been in practice 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
I did 9 years in the emergency room. I did 4 years of general practice.
Mm-hmm.
I had the medicine and the surgery skills
mm-hmm.
well enough to run the place.
Sure.
I didn't need help with that.
Okay.
But the business aspect of it terrified me.
All right.
There was no way I could do this without someone. And so I didn't actually think about owning a practice until I met my wife.
Sure.
And, she floated the idea of, hey, if I run the back, you want to run the front?
Oh.
And that's when I was like, well, that's a deal I can make, because I can't do the whole thing. So the first thing I tell people is, make sure you got people that you trust helping you out.
Sure.
In position. And I think that goes for any business, right?
Right.
Make sure you got people you trust. You got to plan ahead, but you can't overplan.
Fair.
You know, the we had a plan in place. We bought the practice. We knew we were going to build it.
Okay.
We knew it needed to grow because it wasn't building it. It wasn't paying its own bills.
Right.
But and there are some people that say that they can, you know, in 2 years I'm going to be busy enough to have an associate. And
sure.
2 years after that, I'm going to buy another building, and then mm-hmm. and then by 10 years from now, I'm going to have 3 clinics, and I'm going to have this empire going.
Sure.
And I have a lot of respect for people that can do that. For us, you know, we knew that we were going to grow. We had this plan in place. We were going to follow a more traditional trajectory,
mm-hmm.
You know, personal touch, talk to people more.
Right.
But then, you know, be open to what happens. And, you know, again, when the opportunity to purchase another practice came up, that was never on my radar screen.
Sure.
That was never. But the opportunity came up, and you have to be able to say, new information just came in.
Right.
What are you going to do?
Adapt.
And react.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as some managers will tell you, you need to be able to control the variables.
No
sometimes,
way.
Sometimes you have to be able to see them come in and react to
right.
it. Right. You know, and
that's why they're variables.
Well, you know, the best quarterback in the world calls an audible at the line of scrimmage and makes
right.
it work. And,
right.
you know, here we were trucking right along. We were moving. We were growing. And someone says, hey, new information. Buy
right.
this practice or someone else will. And they become
right.
a competitor. All right,
right.
Hang on. Let's call an audible.
Sure.
And that worked for us, but it also, you know, exposed
right.
that growth. And so then I had to learn real fast some other
right.
stuff.
But they're your challenges, so it's all good.
Yes, and I feel good about how we've met them.
Yeah.
All throughout the process of, you know, continuing to deliver the medicine that we deliver. We have great relationships with the clients that we've got.
Yeah.
I really do like it, and it's a it's really still a blast to go to work.
That's cool. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's admirable. There's a lot of people that do not like that for whatever reason.
Well, work can be tough. That's why it's called work.
That's the name of the game, right? That's the name of the game. So have you, what is your favorite thing about going in?
You know, to this day, I can still say that you go into work and you see a patient that you've been seeing for years. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
you see a brand new patient, itty
sure.
bitty kitty, new pup. And there is a tangible bond.
Yeah.
There's a human animal bond. It's been studied.
Right.
It's been characterized.
Mm-hmm.
The benefits of it have been shown
yeah.
across. I mean, it's a bond that it's mutually beneficial. It helps the people and it helps the pet.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to be part of that, to be able to experience it with people,
yeah.
to be able to nurture it, to be instrumental in keeping it strong and healthy is by head and shoulders above everything else that I do.
Sure.
I mean,
that's huge.
Yeah, it's not. I didn't go into practice. I don't drive a Ferrari. You know,
right.
I didn't say I'm going to go and practice so I can make buckets of money.
Sure.
You know, and
Ferrari would be cool.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I've seen the repair bills on those. You might know. But, you know, it's really because if you don't like what you're doing,
right?
You know, what are you going to do?
Fair.
You drive yourself up a wall. So,
right.
Yeah, it's still, you know, seeing that bond in action,
mm-hmm.
that's what drives people to my profession. It still drives most of the people
sure.
through my profession.
Sure. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, I appreciate you being on the show here, Dr. Vitale.
No, I'm glad to
awesome.
Be part of that. I hope there was some enlightenment there somewhere.
There was almost an hour's worth, I would say.
Yeah.
Well, actually, probably 7 hours worth, just packed into an hour.
I guess, yeah, I talk fast.
It goes quick, man.
It does.
This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land, coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. If you're listening to this on the web, please like, subscribe, and share. Those are fancy buttons. We like to use them. My name is James Kateman, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering and receptionist services for small businesses across the country on the web at callsoncall.com. As well as Draw In Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services for entrepreneurs in all stages of their business on the web at drawincustomers.com. And of course, The Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur in all of us, available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as our guest, Dr. Chris Vitale, owner of Sun Prairie Pet Clinic. I almost messed it up again. How can people find you?
Oh, you know, in this day and age, we do have a digital footprint. What do you know?
The internet. It's more than a fad.
SunPrairiePetClinic.com.
Okay.
You know, phone number. We're very personnel based.
Yeah.
Walk in if you want. Come on in. 1512 North Bristol. Been there for 20 some years, the building has. And come on in, talk.
Nice.
Click, call. Trust me, we've got a lot of people like to talk at our place.
That's good stuff. I love it. Thanks for being on the show.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Find us airing on 103.5 Wednesdays at 1 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., as well as at sunprairiemediacenter.com. Past episodes can be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link, found at drawincustomers.com. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week. I want you to stay awesome. And if you do nothing else, enjoy your business.